And transport depends on forage, and forage depends on money. He slapped his saddlebag of coin. That's Napier's lifeblood you've brought us. This'll keep him going for a day or so, and God willing the mules will bring up the rest within the fortnight.
Can we count on the tribes for supplies? Some of the fellows at Tiffin seem to think they might fight. He shook his head.
Not at the moment. They're too glad to see us and our dollars. Fact is, the common folk would like nothing better than to have us conquer the country and rule it. We pay. We'd give them peace from their endless civil wars, protect them from rebels and bandits and locusts and slavers, maybe even relieve their poverty. Do you know that many are so poor they'll sell their wives and daughters even? They're priest-ridden, too. Their kangaroo Christian church gets two-thirds of the peasantry's produce. Aye, two-thirds! The king and their chiefs get a cut of what's left, so there ain't too much over for the brigands to pinch, is there?
I wondered if we'd add Abyssinia to our savage possessions, but he said there was no chance of that.
We're here to free the prisoners, bus, says he.
Oh, the chiefs are all for our removing Theodore and installing one of them in his place, but Napier won't play politics or take sides, and so he's told them. They can't believe we ain't bent on conquest, and I dare say our European pals and the Yankees share their view.
But they're dead wrong. Even the Tories think Britannia's got quite enough empire, thank you very much, and stands in no need of the most advanced barbarians in Africa, whose idea of politics is civil war and massacre. Anyway, he added, what profit is there in a country that's mostly rock and desert? Why, no colonists would look at it.
I asked what had brought him here, into Theodore's service too, and why he'd left it. He rode for a moment in thought, chin down on his chest, and then laughed, almost as though he was embarrassed.
Blowed if I can think of one good reason. They're a murderous lot of pirates, cruel, untrustworthy, immoral, and bone-idle. And I like 'em. Why? 'Cause they're brave and clever and love to laugh, and they're so damn contradictory.
He pointed to a herd of bullocks that were being driven into a corral by Ab cow-whackers.
Those fellows are so sharp they'll get the better of our commissaries at a bargain, bamboozle them with figures, and yet they can't write, and believe that we're buying the bullocks as food for the elephants, and that's God's truth.
He paused and laughed again.
But I guess my best reason for liking Habesh, that's Arabic for Abyssinia, is that they like us. We treat them fair, and unlike the rest of Africa, they're smart enough to admire us, and know they can learn from us, from our engineers and scientists, aye, and our military. You know what they call us? The sons of Shaitan. And it's a compliment.
And Theodore, you must know him better than anyone else.
I don't know him at all. No one does.
He took off his specs and polished them carefully.
He's not just one man. He's many, and they're all damn dangerous. You're going to ask me what he's liable to do. Will he fight? Will he run? Will he hold the captives to ransom? Will he murder them? I haven't the foggiest notion, so I'll not try to answer. Better to let Napier tell you.
And that, I may tell you, sent a shiver down my spine, for it prompted the question why Napier should want to tell me anything at all. I was pondering this when Speedy added,
as to why I left Theodore, 'twas because he'd been listening to lies about me, and I'd no wish to wake up some morning face down on a bed of spear points. So I asked for my back pay and a clear road. Suppose I'll not let you leave, says he. Then I'll fight, says I, and you know I'm not an infant. I can have you killed, says he. Ah, but how quickly, says I, and laid my hand on my hilt. He had no fear, but he paused, and then smiled and embraced me, and said I should have my money, a horse and a spear, and God be with me.
He chucked his reins.
Let's raise the pace, shall we?
From Zula, the barren scrubland rises slowly to the base of the hills, and it took us 5 hours uncomfortable riding across stone-choked dry riverbeds and little slithering screes before we came to the plateau from which you could look back at the huge panorama of the distant camp, like a sand-table model, and Annesley Bay with its forest of shipping, and the Red Sea beyond. Ahead of us lay the way station of Ku Mei Li, in a broad basin with sheer cliffs towering on either hand, and a massive rampart of stone before us, crimson in